McLaughlin on City Talk 105.9.
Trinity Mirror, the owners of the Liverpool Daily Post Necco, had bought a leading web design and interactive business based here in the city of Liverpool and Manchester for up to £5.8 million. The company, Ripple Effect, has won a stack of plaudits, and what may have surprised many was that it was founded by one Ben and one Derek Hatton. Rewind 25 years, and the latter name was often vilified in the said Liverpool Echo and Daily Post, They were buying a business from the former militant deputy leader of Liverpool. How times have changed. So how do you go from being a communist militant to a capitalist millionaire? And along the way, how do you clear your name in a criminal court in North Wales and become a local and national talk radio host, as well as a successful even property developer in Cyprus and a man with a finger in a number of pies? Well, the man opposite me can answer all those questions. He turned 60 earlier this year and he joins us live and exclusively. It is Degsy, the one and only Derek Hatton. Good morning.
Robert, how are you? I was just looking down there at the town hall and thinking you were like a 17, 18-year-old pimply-faced reporter the first time you...
14.
You ever interviewed me, and here we are now, what, 10 years later?
And I'm still pimply and I'm still, yeah. And you know what? I'm sure I never got an answer out of him either. But let's talk about you now, first of all. How do you describe Derek Hatton today?
Derek Hatton.
But go on.
No, but I mean, that's all you need to describe him. I mean, the problem you've got, that wasn't being arrogant at all. That was just saying that, I mean, you came out with a whole number of phrases there and explanations and everything that goes with it. And at the end of the day, to the vast majority of people who are listening, the vast majority of people who know me, it's fairly unimportant and irrelevant. That just gives a job for you. It gives a job for journalists. It gives a job for
politicians. But what are you? Are you an entrepreneur? Are you?
I'm a person who's involved in a lot of things. I still have an interest, a passing interest in politics. I obviously am involved in businesses. I love doing the odd bit of radio, although these days I haven't got the time to do what I used to do. I've got 4 incredible kids and 8 incredible grandkids who I'm very, very, very fond of and very proud of. I love going to watch my beloved Everton Football Club. I play some golf.
Did you almost say Liverpool there, by the way?
No, I never nearly said it. No, there wasn't even a question of me saying that, I can promise you. I'm one of those people who sat watching AC Milan against Liverpool in the final with an AC Milan scarf on. I can promise you there's no chance of that happening. So yeah, that's me, Rob. And yes, I've got opinions on things, and yes, I have many, many debates in many, many places.
And was it a great irony? Did you enjoy the irony that there was Trinity Mirror buying a company that owned the Liverpool Daily Post and Echo, which during the 80s, of course, would have vilified you?
Well, not really, because you know more than most. I am not somebody who bears grudges at all. Some of the people who were my worst were enemies and adversaries in the 80s are people now I'll sit and have a pint with and everything else. I mean, you know, you've got Chris Johnson here, and Chris's people in the 80s were vicious sometimes. Now, that doesn't stop me liking him as a person.
His people at Mercury Press.
At Mercury Press. Doesn't stop me liking him as a person and getting on with him, saying, well, that was his job. That was their job at the time. That was your job to a degree. That was a number of people's job. Now, I'm not going to be one of those people who start saying, I hate those individuals, because I don't hate those individuals. Some of them are really nice people, and some of the lovely people in the Echo, just because at that moment that institution had a job to do which was different than I had to do. I mean, that was the way the world was.
You feel differently about the World in Action team, though, don't you?
Not at all, no. Right. I mean, I've had
because they did turn you over, as the phrase goes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's fairly irrelevant. I mean, they did it poorly. If they'd have done it well, then maybe I'd have had more respect for them. They did it poorly.
What did they leave out then?
Exactly.
Would you like to reveal the bits they didn't get?
I mean, they revealed virtually nothing that wasn't already known.
But was I right in the introduction when I talked about the deal, Ripple Effect, £5.8 million, it's made you a millionaire? Is that correct? Were you already a millionaire?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt about it. That particular deal was very, very good for us. And, you know, I mean, although I was chairman of the company and I with Ben started off, in real terms, all the credit has to go to Ben and the management team, because although I opened doors and put some money in at different occasions, they were the ones who did it, and they were the ones who are carrying on doing it now. You know, I couldn't be more proud of Ben, my son, for what he's done and what he's going on to do. And it was a fabulous experience for me. It was funny, I've said it
and the company is hugely respected.
That's the other thing as well, it is. I mean, of course I played my part in it. And as chairman, I had to go to certain meetings and be involved in certain things, they opened the doors. But the actual stuff was run by Ben, and all the real, real respect that it's got is as a result of him and his team.
Now, there was a nice moment there, because when we were doing the meanest quiz and everything, there was a nice moment, because you were looking out the window here at the tower, because obviously we're 450 feet up, and you're looking over at the Liver buildings, and you're looking at the water, and you were talking about, you know, the cranes and the developments, etc., etc. Let me take you back to the 1980s, when you came into power. Do you think now you owe the people of Liverpool an apology?
Not one little bit. You've got to remember that two things. First of all, that we actually never lost an election in Liverpool, and we didn't.
Labour.
Well, that was the party I was with, if you remember, Rob. I know you've got your memory's gone because your age, but it was that we never actually not lost an election in Liverpool, and we didn't get like 6 and 7% turnouts. We got 60 and 70% turnouts. There was an activity and an interest all around the city. Some people hated us, some people loved us, but nonetheless, there was a debate going
Some
on
people
all
feared
the time.
You.
Well, I don't know whether they ever did. I mean, the press like to use those words, but I'm sure that was true at all.
But don't you think,
Derek? I think in that period, we actually got to a stage where we actually achieved quite a lot. I mean, you were talking about, I look out the window, me and Chris were looking out the window, and you were saying, what is that? And we looked out at some of the housing estates, you can still see that are still there. You ask those people that are now living in those houses, have lived in there for 20 years, who got houses with double glazing, gardens back in front and garage, who lived in the crappiest tenements going beforehand, where the roofs were leaking and everything else. You ask them whether an apology is needed. I think maybe, I think some of the attacks that we got from people who knew no better actually deserve to give people a Liverpool apology.
But when I say an apology, Derek, I'm thinking, of course, of the 33,000 redundancies going round and the
Rob,
taxis.
Come on, behave yourself, Neil, lad. It's 2008, right? You know better than anyone, and don't use cheap jibes like that. It's way,
No,
it is. It's way below you.
Why is that a cheap jibe?
Because you know very well, not one single one of those redundancy notices were acted upon, and nor would they ever be. A notice was sent out with every single one of those, signed by me and John Hamilton, saying they wouldn't be acted upon, and they wouldn't. It was purely a tactic. You know that, I know that, and to throw that in at this stage after, Rob, you disappoint me.
Well, I may disappoint you, Derek.
And it's like we've gone back 25 years. It's like the old days,
this.
Isn't it?
I can't believe this. I thought we were going to have a sensible discussion, mate.
Well, he's not hard to wind up, is he? He's not lost the old head.
But hold on a minute. I mean, you're blaming me. It's always nice to take the blame. But I was thinking more of what Neil Kinnock did, of course, in 1985. And then, you know, a lot of you and a lot of your members were thrown out of the Labour Party. But let me go back to a key point. You said a moment ago that you were a member of the Labour Party. Of course, the suspicion was that you were a member of another organisation within the Labour Party. You at the time, if I'm correct, Chris, at the time, I think you probably denied you were a member of Militant. Clear it up now. Were you a member of a movement, a Trotskyist movement, within the Labour Party?
Of course I was. And I've said a million times since then I was, and so were many other people. But it didn't take away our absolute passion and belief in the Labour Party in those days. And more importantly, you know those people that went out in Liverpool and put their crosses on the ballot paper, right? At that moment, they knew exactly what they were getting. Never before and never since, Rob, has the manifesto been so clear in terms of understanding it, and never before or after has it ever been carried out almost to the letter exactly what we said we were going to do. So to those people, it doesn't really matter.
But you say you believed in the Labour Party. Presumably, Derek, when you look back, you believed in the Labour Party in a funny kind of way that you helped to keep out of power nationally.
I think a lot of people believe in the Labour Party in a funny sort of way.
Well,
there's no other way to believe in them, particularly now.
But you say you believed in a Labour Party that you arguably helped keep out of power for 18 years.
No, that was crap as well, and you know it was. I mean, the reality is,
crap on this show, by the way.
I thought you could, thank you. No, but I mean, the reality is it was, because the reason why the Labour Party was out was because they actually didn't make it very clear what they were doing. At the time, if we got elected in Liverpool because the people knew exactly what they were getting. Nobody knew what they were getting with Kinnock or any of that lot. I mean, it was just so confused. They were trying to be a bit on the left, a bit on on the right bit in the middle, keep this person happy and everything. Somewhere along the line, you've got to say, hang on, that's what we're going to do. Like it or not, but you either vote for us or you don't. And nobody knew what Kinnock and them were going for.
Stay with me for a moment, because what I'm asking you really here is, what were you then? What did you believe in then? Did you believe in revolution or what?
Rob, I don't believe you're doing this. Somewhere along the line, you must have sat last night and you must have read all the old archives, going there thinking, that's what I'm going. Do you realise there are people listening now who have not got a clue what you're talking about Trotsky organisations and militants organising?
You're ducking my question.
No, I've never ducked a question in my life, and you're better than that. I'm saying is, to those people who are listening, to those people who were around at the time, what was important was that houses got built, the gyps sports centres got built. I know it wasn't, but it was such a poor question, you guys answering in a different way. There were so many houses built, there were so many sports centres built, there were so many jobs created, and that's what people believe.
But I'm trying to work out.
I know what you're trying to work out, and you've obviously got a problem with that, and you should go home and sit to yourself and have things. Hang on, how do I resolve? Maybe our dear doctor here can sort you out. You're a psychologist.
Boys,
I think he's much. I think you should sit with him and try and sort something out.
No, I'm trying to work out the journey. That's taking you to where you are now. So let me go back. Go on, Chris.
I was going to ask, actually, Derek, a question to comment on today's politics, because the thing that strikes me is that when you got with Derek Hatton, you know, you got what you saw on the can. You know, he is what he is.
That's my question.
Well, no, I think you did. Oh, you definitely did. There's no doubt about that. As Derek, I well remember Derek back then, walking down the street and people were shaking his hand. I mean, this man was a hero in this city to an awful lot of people. We can't deny that.
But to a lot of other people.
Well,
we're talking about you now.
There'll always be detractors, won't there? But I admit, hand on heart, you know... I was working for the national newspapers, and he was, public enemy number one in the Tory party, obviously, because what they didn't want to see was him succeeding in Liverpool. Anyway, we won't try and replay the whole thing, but what I'm saying is, the point is with Derek, he was a definite conviction politician.
Stop trying to bail him out.
What I'm saying is the problem with politics today is it's so bland.
All right, I'm going to break.
Don't ever suggest that I need bailing out, Rob.
Now, he's got his boxing gloves on, as you'll have heard prior to the news. Joining me live and exclusively in the studio is the one and only Derek Hatton. Chris, you were asking him a quick question.
I was saying, Derek, don't you think that politics today, you can't put a cigarette paper between Cameron and Blair?
Well, I think to a degree, you're right, Chris.
Cameron and Brown.
Freudian slip. I think the reality is that you probably could. If you got, I've said a number of times, if you got Cameron and you got Brown in the one room and you didn't actually know who was who and you just asked them a number of questions, somebody who'd sort of had been in a coma for 20 years came back and saw and listened to the two of them, I am convinced that they would think that Cameron was the Labour Party and Brown was the Tory Party. Absolutely convinced. And that's been going for some time. Who would have imagined 20 years ago that you could have had a Labour Party that would actually say, to go into one of the most right-wing presidents that the United States has ever had and say to him, you want to go to war in Iraq? OK. You want us to make some stories up about nuclear? Of course we will. Of course. Do we know it's a lie? Of course we know it's a lie. But we'll do it. Of course, is it the safest place really in the Arab world for terrorists? It is the safest place. That doesn't matter, does it? What, upset your dad? Yes, we'd support the ultimate. Mm. I mean, who on earth would ever believe the Labour Party leader would have done that?
A lot of people believe the next election in this country will be won by whichever party is most New Labour, so your point is well made. But let me ask you this, Derek. What are your politics now?
It's a good question, but it relates to the question before, Rob, doesn't it? Because I don't know where they would lie, because I don't know where they would lie in terms of what party. Let me put it this way. I don't think my hand would ever allow me to put a cross against a Conservative candidate. Just wouldn't do that, just because of history. Not because of the logic of it, just because of history. I just don't. In the old days when people used to sort of vote Labour because their dad had done and their granddad had done anything else, it's a bit like that with me. I could never, ever vote Tory because I wouldn't be able to. Having said that, it's very difficult as well sometimes to vote for the Labour Party because of what they've done. And I've got to be absolutely honest here and say something which I've always argued in. There have been times lately where I just haven't voted, and there is no excuse for that.
Really? You believe that? Okay, well, let's turn to the field. But you would never go back into politics?
No, not a million years. I mean, every time the mayor of Liverpool comes up, you can guarantee that I get about 20 phone calls from different media organisations saying, are you going to stand? Are you staying? I mean, there's no way in this world.
You know why that is, Derek? That's because you'd win. Right, yeah,
well,
you would.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting. I mean, it would be, but I just, the thought of going through. You see, the problem is you wouldn't know where to identify yourself as far as politics is about the overall picture is concerned. You'd be such an individualist and you'd be such a clear one-line person that, I mean...
People would vote for President Hatton, I think. Yeah.
Now, you said earlier you don't think you should apologise for anything happened in the 80s, etc., etc., but when you look back, what was the 80s for you? Was it a platform for Derek Hatton?
I mean, there's no doubt about it. Nobody in this world could have done what we did in the 80s and take the sort of flak and opposition from outside of the city that we took if they didn't passionately believe in it. I was so passionate about what we did in the 80s. I mean, time and time again, Kinnock and others used to come along and offer us all sorts of deals, safe seats here, safe seats there, do this, we'll sort this out if you just calm down and don't do that. I mean, it would be the easiest thing in the world for me to get on that Labour Party treadmill. But there's no way in this world that I was going to do it because there was a passion, there was a belief that that's why we did it. There was no other reason whatsoever. Once 87 came and it finished, the very, very, very different ball game then, because you're then in a position where you had to say, what am I now going to do with my life? Because you knew that the politics had finished. I mean, to their eternal credit, the one or two of my colleagues and those are still involved politically, they're still fighting the cause, and they believe that, and I don't, but they do, and I've got every respect for them for carrying on doing that.
Now, you turned all of that experience into almost, allow me to say, a brand. Derek Hatton, to a degree, which was my opening question, what is Derek Hatton today? Derek Hatton is almost a brand, isn't it? And it's almost an undefinable brand in the sense that your passion, presumably now, is business, but your passion is also, what, celebrity?
No, my passion now is probably actually having a life that I enjoy and being with people that I want to be with. I mean, luckily, I'm in a position where since that, as I say, I've got four amazing kids, I've got eight amazing grandkids, and I spend as much time with them. I do a lot of work in Cyprus, and we do a lot of building work over there around a proposed golf course, and I'm there for half the month each month. Which is a fabulous place to be, and I've been doing that for about 5 years now. I, as you know, I was involved with Ben with Ripple Effect, one or two other little odds and sods going on. I very rarely miss an Everton game, play a bit of golf, I just enjoy what I'm doing, and at the same time I also enjoy discussions like this, either in the pub or around a restaurant or in a radio studio. I still enjoy that.
And how do you feel about Derek Hatton being 60?
That's not good at all. That's not that is probably the cheapest jibe you've ever come about.
It's not a jibe, it's a question.
I'm only joking on that one. No, I don't. I mean, it's...
You mean you weren't joking on the other ones?
No, I wasn't joking on the other ones, no. I mean, I think being 60 is... It's easy for me to say 60 is the new 40 and it's only a number and all those things and you don't feel it or you don't look it, all that sort of... At the end of the day, it is 60 years of life for those organs inside your body, which are probably are less young than they were a year ago and 10 years ago, and that's the thing you think, and you just... I mean, I do all I can to keep myself physically and mentally fit.
You want to tell me you want to live forever?
Of course I do. Absolutely no question.
Do you
question.
Think you could be the first man to?
Well, I tell you what, someone's got to start that ball rolling, Rob. So I'm going to have a go. No, but seriously, I mean, there is people who say... I was with somebody, you might know him, so I won't mention his name, a few weeks ago to do. And I'll tell you where we were, it's Stan Boardman's 70th, believe it or not.
Is he 70?
He's 70.
Happy birthday, Stan.
And we were there, and this bloke, who I've known for some time, was talking to me about periods in life, and he said, well, you have the first period where you're a kid, and you go to school, and you get married, and you have all that. Then you have a second period where you sort of have your kids, they grow up, and everything else. Then you have your third period where you calm down, and you just take it easy, and you're like... And I say, and you then die! I mean, I couldn't believe he was... And this is a fella who's been active all his life, doing us... And he was talking about being now in the third stage of his life, and saying, oh, yeah, you've just got to... Oh, that's what you got to do, Degs. You've just got to sit back and let death happen, virtually, he was saying. Well, I'll tell you what, I promise you, Rob, I will never get to that final stage in my life. I mean, if I go, I go. And if I get something that I've said to people around me, if I get to the stage where I have no control over myself, I want someone to put a bullet in my head. I mean, that's the only... The thought...
Really, there are a few people... Can I put my name down?
But, I mean, there is no way in this world I would ever, whilst I've got faculties about me, ever want to accept the fact that I'm sick to you getting old.
Dr. Ian was admiring you from a medical point of view and saying how fit you are. Let me ask you a very personal question, Derek. Have you had anything done?
No, not well. I tell a lie, actually. There's one thing I have done because I was.
Can you tell us on the radio?
Yeah, no. It's been in the paper. I once upon a time. Well, once upon a time, it's about 3 or 4 years ago. I got involved in a company that was involved in cosmetic surgery and stuff. Only on the outskirts, did a bit of marketing for them. Anyway, I met this doctor who did Botox and everything else. And I don't know, people have little things about them that niggle them in their either in their face or their body or whatever. And I had a line, just one line on my forehead, which niggled me because it was a deep line that really annoyed me, that one line. And he said, come here. And he goes, da-da-da-da-da-da. Within 24 hours, that one line had gone. So every 6 months, I get that one line done. Now, that's still the only... Yeah, and still, that's great. Every 6 months, I go and do that one.
Presumably, that line was his militancy that he had removed.
Do you know what I mean? And that one line, that one crease, makes me feel better when I look at it. And well, I have no worries about saying that.
We've got to draw this to a close, sadly. But I hope you'll come back at some stage, and maybe you'll stay on for the Eurovision Song Competition that's coming up.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that.
It's a real torture. You'd have to be very brave.
You haven't asked me any much about. So I thought you were going to talk about Cyprus as well.
I want to come on and ask you a final question, which really is. What now, then? We've seen these transformations, we've seen the controversies, we've seen the scrapes, which they were at times, the court cases and so on.
Yeah.
We've seen all of that. We've now seen this success with Ripple Effect and Cyprus. You've talked about that. You've told us you want to live forever. You want to be the first man to try and do that. What next?
It's a good question, and I don't know. And the great thing
is... That's the first time you've ever complimented me on a question.
Yeah. Because it's still an exciting time in my life, and I'm enjoying it. I am. Cyprus is a fascinating country, and I say we're doing a lot of developments at the moment, some great investments, and people are investing in there, making a lot of money out of them, and they're very happy about that. For that reason, I feel good. I mean, you know, it's not one of those situations where you get into where you sort of stand and find, you sell and walk away. I actually love being there and being part of it. And I think probably I'll end up spending maybe 2 weeks out of every four in Cyprus over
Will
the
next you do more
years.
Broadcasting?
I don't know. I mean, I, obviously, as you know, they're always on to me about doing bits and pieces. I think I'll do the odd stand-in and stuff like that. I wouldn't have time to do everything once a week or every week. Because unless I got a studio in Cyprus.
Would you like to stand in for the Sunday breakfast show while I'm away?
Hey, Rob, I'm not sure I can ever wear that hat, love.
Derek Hatton, as ever, it's a great pleasure.
Thanks,
thank you
Rob.
For coming and thank you for joining us. Derek Hatton.
Rob McLaughlin on City Talk 105.9.